Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. Steve and I are connected this time by FaceTime. How's it going, man?
It is good.
And, you know, we've said this a bunch of times on and off the air that we hate just constantly talking about Trump, but this week he gave us no choice. First of
all, I think just the circumstances, right? I mean, this is more than just him. I mean, because I think one way or another you were going to talk to him, either he was going or you were going to talk about him. I think he was either going to respond well, which I don't think a lot of people were betting on, or he was not going to respond well. And, you know, we have what we have. So
first,
here we are.
Yeah, first we have General Mad Dog Mattis, a nickname apparently Trump now says he gave to former Defense Secretary General Mattis, who really came out and criticized Trump for his discussions of using the military, the federal military, in to solve domestic issues. And I think it's called the Insurrection Act, which is what allows them to do that, because without that, it is strictly forbidden to use the
U.S. military on... Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've only used the Insurrection Act, I believe, 3 times in the history of the United States, maybe 4. The last time we used it, oddly enough, was during... during the Civil Rights Movement and, in the 60s. But it was really more to protect black people that were protesting and just the amount of unrest that it caused in the South. That was the last time that we used it. And then there were a couple other times it was used dating back to,
The Whiskey Rebellion probably was one of them.
Yeah, yes, going back to the Civil War and things like that. So, I mean, it's it's something you really don't want to see. Our U.S. military is trained really to take out enemies, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, we give them this job of nation building. We have not done a good job with that. People in the military will argue it's not that they're not good at it, it's just that we're doing it wrong. But that aside, I mean, the results speak for themselves. And the idea of unleashing the U.S. military force on its own people is a scary one, even if it's just a flex,
right?
Just to try to get people to calm down. It's still just something you don't want to see, because I mean, we've seen where that can go wrong in other countries.
Yeah. Right?
And we like to believe that we have all these stop gaps in place that will prevent us from becoming like Venezuela, or prevent us from coming like pick a country that's crumbled under bad leadership. And the reality is that as long as the country is run by human beings, right, then those humans have flaws. They're fallible, and there's a risk, and so you don't want to see that happen. Again, U.S. troops on U.S. soil, and so Mattis came out. I think that's what Mattis is saying. He's like, look, we're trained to kill and destroy, and if you unleash that, then these guys don't have an off switch. So be careful what you ask for. And, obviously Trump responded exactly like you expected he would respond, with the personal attacks, and, nobody liked him and he was lazy, and I gave him the nickname that everybody uses. And basically Trump essentially saying that he made General Mattis to a degree or so. I mean, all the typical stuff. Nobody liked him. I mean,
he didn't bring home the bacon was my favorite one.
Right.
Whatever the fuck that means.
What does that even mean? He's the Secretary of Defense. What bacon was he supposed to bring home? it's just, I mean, the guy is so predictable, and you have to wonder where people who were on the fence with him before, you know, people love to say there is no middle ground with Trump, but I really believe that there was. I think that middle ground is shrinking. I think people are either going to become more entrenched with supporting him and are probably going to sound insane when they do, or people are just starting the rose-colored glasses are starting to come off, and people are just starting to kind of realize him for what he is. And yes, they want change in the government, and they want to take out the swamp and everything else, but they realize that he's too much of a clusterfuck.
He's swampy. You know, you say he's predictable, and I agree with you in the regard you just said it, but if you'd have told me he was going to have the streets tear gassed so he could walk down the street to hold a Bible in front of a church, or that he would tell everyone that the economics are so good right now, I'll bet George Floyd is looking down from heaven, seeing these numbers, and smiling. I would have said, there's no way he goes that far. And both those things happened this week.
Yeah, I his remarks about George Floyd, they're not surprising, but they are in a way, right? Just completely tone deaf. And you know, people want to argue and say, well, Trump's not racist, and he cares about everyone. But when you make a statement like that to completely ignore everything that's been going on and everything that people are talking about, and then to say, well, the jobs report is good, and so George Floyd didn't die in vain, and, you know, a good jobs report means that everybody's working more than we thought they were, which means I'm sure there's a connection that he's trying to say that there's, you know, that means more black people are working, even though those numbers that they showed, they're issues that they're saying that those numbers could be fabricated. But the reality is that you still have a big gap between, you know, unemployment and the black community and unemployment and for everybody else. So, you know, there's still things that he needs to address. And it's just in his mind, it's I'm not going to focus on the negative. And by not focus on it, I'm just going to ignore it and act like it's not there.
Right. If I close my eyes, you can't see me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what that's what you're working with.
I think that tone deaf does not do that remark justice. It's to me, it felt like I've got three catchphrases to get in here: good economy, George Floyd, and something religious. And I need to cram those into one thought. So he put it in a tweet. And when we were talking earlier, you said it and it didn't initially process with me. You said that this is in the archives, and then it processed. You're not saying it's something that people will remember. It's in the National fucking Archives.
Yes.
So this is on a, oh God, you know,
yes. Yes, the president's tweets are being archived by the National Archives. And this is, these are statements that people will be able to go back and read. Going back and looking, it wasn't on Twitter.
Okay.
He actually said it at a memorial service or something along those lines. So there's that.
Okay, good.
But either way,
wait, did still, I just say good?
Like, well, either way, it's still something that's being, I mean, he said it in a public forum. So, I mean, it's still going to be around for a long time that our leader, this is his thought process.
So I was actually talking to a friend who's typically not into politics, but would typically vote Republican because she's in an economic bracket that has convinced her to believe she should. And but Trump has made her just say, I can't deal with this guy anymore. She and I were talking purely about business stuff, and I told her about that comment, and she literally went, shut up. He did not actually say that. Oh, yes, he did. All right, I'm calling you out. Are you making this up? Nope. And she said, it's like, my jaw just literally dropped when you told me that. And this is someone who tries to stay out of politics.
Yeah, I feel like this has not been a good, really, it's just not been a good month or a couple months for him. You know, there was a lot of, before George Floyd, there was a lot of tension about the COVID response, and he's going on the defensive, and you know, part of the issue is he goes on the defensive because he gets attacked by the media. He doesn't like being attacked by the media. He feels that he should, the media should really only be talking about the good things that he does. And then anything bad is fake or, you know, there's nefarious reasoning behind it. Now, I think he's not necessarily wrong. There's plenty of fake news that gets reported. And it's because of people's biases and their objection to him. I think that there is, you know, inaccurate news and news that's meant to really kind of cut to the bone. I think they see how he acts, so they try to react in kind. And so you do have this really ugly relationship between them.
Agreed.
But even still, even with that, I think he was just having a bad, you know, a bad couple months. And I think that it, what it did was it really allowed for Joe Biden to make up ground, even though Joe Biden wasn't doing much of anything. And is still kind of fumbling around with this presidential election.
So I would argue that Fox News was every bit as hostile to Obama as anything has been to Trump. I can say that with a complete straight face. Obama stayed above the fray. I think the most aggressive thing Obama did was say, if you listen to some networks, you'd assume I've never done anything right or something like that. That's the most aggressive.
Well, I mean, Obama did ban Fox from the White House or from the press pool.
Okay. I didn't remember that. So, all right. Yeah,
he did.
Okay.
And that was, I mean, and that's wrong, right?
Yeah, I
mean,
I agree.
That's an attack on free speech and the First Amendment. And, you know, I think that should have gotten more airplay in the media. And I think that that's something that really Obama should have been held to account for, that, like, you can't do that. And has Trump done that? He's been really petty. He's kicked certain people out or not answered their questions, but he hasn't gone that far. So, I mean, I think you're right. Fox was very hostile, but, I mean, Trump cut with a pretty strong – or, I'm sorry, Obama cut back with a pretty strong blow himself.
All right. Well – this is a subject I would love to avoid, but the town of my birth, what I call my hometown, Buffalo, New York, had a really bad fucking week. And if you haven't seen the images of what happened during a protest related to the death of George Floyd in downtown Buffalo, a 75-year-old man got tangled up with. It's an odd video. I've only seen it on my phone, and I can't see exactly what was going on. But he ends up getting tangled up with riot police and gets knocked down, lands on his head, cracks his head on the concrete, is laying there with blood coming out of his head as they basically walk right over him. Those two officers were very quickly suspended without pay, and the task force that was out there, which had 57 other members, all resigned from that division or that role after it happened because they felt the officers had been treated unfairly. Now, if you watch this video, it's pretty gross. I mean, this guy is an old, skinny dude. He gets shoved, and it wasn't the most vicious attack, but he's 75 years old getting shoved with a riot shield. And the part that bothered me the most is after he goes down and is, again, bleeding from the head, no one comes to his attention, and one officer even starts to and is told, don't.
So, first of all, I think it's interesting that you never mentioned that the guy, he was an old white guy. You never brought
him into it. I said old.
Right, you said old, but you didn't mention that he was white, which I think it's interesting that you didn't mention his race.
Okay.
And it's just a side note to think about why you didn't, because had it been an old black lady, you definitely would have said that she was black, right?
Probably, yeah.
And so I think that there's that's meaningful, but I can't exactly tell you what it means. You know, so the issue with this is it's a really ugly video. I mean, again, it's a 75-year-old white guy, you know, standing there, and it looks like he's maybe trying to get out of the way or something along those lines, and then, bam, they shove him right down, and his head smacks, and he's bleeding out of his ear. the guy just, you know, goes to help him up, and like you said, the other officer slaps him away. And so it looks bad, and this goes back to our conversation with Mike Wood Jr., where he talked about we don't like the end result. But the problem is that the unit that these guys are on, you know, based on the conversation that I, you know, I've had with another police officer, was that this is what these guys are trained to do. Like, when they're that particular unit, when they're in that formation, you know, with the shields out, they're supposed to be this kind of locomotive force that doesn't stop for anything. If something is in the way, they're supposed to clear a path, right? And that's what they're trained to do. And if we're deployed, then this is the mode in which we operate. We do not break standard operating procedure, whether it's for a raging 250-pound, you know, ape of a man, or if it's a 75-year-old guy that's trying to get, you know, pick up his wallet, you know, on the way to Denny's. One way or another, you need to get through that, and we treat them both the same. And so the officer, based off of what he was trained and what their procedures are, did the right thing. We just don't like the outcome, right?
All right.
And so what his people, what the other officers did was they said, look, if you're going to suspend these guys and possibly charge them,
they've been charged
with, you know, because they did their job, then that means we can't do our job, and so we're going to quit. Now, I think there's, I don't know if they, you said that they quit this task force, but they didn't quit the 57.
That's my understanding, that they're not okay. resigning from the police force. They're saying we no longer want to work for the, you know, riot. Anti-riot team or whatever it's called, yeah. Drawn a blank.
And so, and that brings, that's just a, that brings a different perspective to it. And I'm not sure what that move means, right? Are they doing it in a move of solidarity with the officers who were arrested and charged? Or are they saying, you guys were giving us bad instructions, we quit? I think it's more of a move of solidarity for the two officers that had been charged. And that, again, it makes sense based on the structure that's in place, right? Like, nobody would have an issue with this if they were doing it in a situation where, let's say it was a politician that you did like, and they're trying to get to that politician because that politician was being protested. Like, if it were Obama, right? If it were Obama and Obama was giving a speech and it was white nationalists protesting him and getting rowdy, and then these guys come through and start bowling people out of the way, you know, all the swastika, you know, Confederate flag waving people, nobody would give a shit about the result, right? Everybody would be happy with the result. Like, you cleared a path and you saved Obama, yay. But in this particular instant, you didn't like the result because it was an old guy and it looked terrible. So that goes back to the conversation with Wood, where we need to change the structure in which we allow these guys to operate in. Right, like if we feel that it's absolutely necessary to have these type of task force and these sort of you know, teams within the police division, then maybe we need to give them better instruction, where you have to be able to decipher between a threat and an old guy just crossing your path.
Right. No, that's a fair point. And again, the. Use the word perfectly. The result is what's awful. I mean, the impact between the officer and the guy that got knocked down was not an incredibly violent thing. It's just an old guy who got hit in an awkward way and clunked his head. Having said that, he ended up in the ICU and was, at one point, his life was considered in danger. Now, he has subsequently regained consciousness, and he's, I believe, still in the hospital as we're talking now, but his condition has been upgraded. The guy is not going to die. But had he died, who knows how much worse, you know, the charges would have been. They've been charged with assault. I actually don't expect that charge to hold any weight, but I think every mayor is sitting back right now saying, I have to err on the side of being tough on the police because we don't want our streets to literally catch fire. I mean, we're here in Cleveland. I don't even know if I'm allowed to go downtown right now. Are we?
I don't know. I haven't, like, you know, I mean, I haven't tried, and You're right. I mean, I think, again, going back to this whole idea of changing how policing works, I mean, you know, mayors are scared shitless right now because the police report up to them. The police is their responsibility, and it falls solely on them. And right now, their police, some police are handling this well, others are not. And those police, those mayors whose police forces aren't handling it well are shitting themselves.
Right.
And, you know, where you would have a different sort of scenario is if the police weren't reporting to the mayor, but they had a civilian review board and certain administrators that handled this process, that put processes in place to prevent things like this from happening. You know, figuring out ways to deal with large crowds and protests and things like that that don't have to include, you know, bowling over old people just because they get in the way. You know, I mean, and an officer is going to argue that they have to do a threat analysis. And when they do their threat analysis, they basically say, listen, everything is a threat, right? That old man could have a gun in his back pocket and he could start shooting us. And we have to be prepared for all the things. We just don't know what's out there. And everything is the worst thing ever all the time. And we just have to be prepared at all times. And I think at some point in time, we either accept that to be true, that every single person that a police officer comes in contact with is a threat to their safety, so we have to continue to allow them to have itchy trigger fingers and be as aggressive as they want to be and justify it by saying they fear for their life, or we have to take that power away from them and say, you have to use better judgment. You have to understand that not every single person is a fucking risk, and you have to be able to determine that very quickly, and if you fuck up, that there is a repercussion. And if you don't like it, don't take the fucking job. Just don't. The idea, like, they all come back and say, well, if you put those sort of standards in, nobody's going to do it. Then, okay, fine. Then we'll figure out another way. Then all you assholes fucking quit, and don't come to me with, oh, we'll see how you like it. I don't call you.
Right.
My entire life, I have never fucking called the police, and I have had fucking guns pointed at me. So fuck all the way off.
Well,
right? I mean, because I've had criminals and police point guns at me, right? And you guys have treated me like shit when I do fucking come in and interact with you. So no, I'm not gonna call you. So you can quit. Fuck your pension. Fuck your retirement. And fuck all these things that have to be, because that's the only way they've ever been done. I am absolutely tired of these crybaby police officers claiming that everyone needs them more than anything else in the fucking world, and that without them, it's all gonna fucking fall apart.
And the irony of this is that I can understand in the circumstance that the cops in Buffalo are in, where they're surrounded by not just a 75-year-old white skinny dude, but a bunch of other people, and the situation's stressful, and they're following, you know, procedures. I can understand why those cops felt like there was a threat, but this all stems from cops acting in a way that cost a man his life who could not have been less of a threat. He was on the ground, handcuffed, face down, and that cocksucker kneels on his neck for 8.5 minutes. And had that not happened, the underlying issue would still be there. And I'm not trying to, you know, suggest that, oh, everything would be fine if not for these four assholes in Minnesota. But the, you know, to identify a threat when there's a protest going on where there has been rioting in other parts of the countries and other parts of the country and in Buffalo, for them to be on edge and feel threatened and feel like we need to advance, I kind of get it now.
I do get it. But again, I think it's we either have to say we're going to hold them to a higher standard, and if they feel that it's an impossible standard and no one can live up to it, then so be it, because we can't continue down the path that we're on.
Agreed.
Right? Like, the standard just has to be higher. You have to be able to figure out if someone's a threat, and then you figure it out, and then if they are, you deal with it. And if they're not, you don't. And not everything is a life-threatening situation just because you get startled.
Right, I agree.
While I agree the situations are completely different, that outcome wasn't required.
Oh,
like,
I agree.
There were other ways that could have been resolved. And I get it. Like, I understand your point, but I just think we have to continue to push the idea that just doing it the way it's always been done, we can't accept that as an excuse
right.
anymore.
Right. Now, I mean, you know me as you know, my approach to engineering is I hate the expression "we've always done it that way." That's a bullshit argument. When you're doing something dumb just because it was done that way before you for years, doesn't make it the way to go now. Or I smack my mic. You know, sometimes change has to be wholesale, which I think this is one of those times.
And we have to go back to community expectations, right? Because one of the arguments is that, you know, people want all, you know, people want threats eliminated. They want them eliminated quickly. And they want to avoid these bad results, right? Like, so people call the police because there's an immediate threat and they want that threat removed. It needs to be removed quickly by any means necessary. And I think we have to change, again, what as a community, what we're expecting out of the police. We put too much responsibility on them as a catch-all. Like, and police describe themselves on a regular basis as jack of all trades, and they've got to do all these things, and I get they wear it with the badge of honor because many of them do believe that they're serving community in the best way possible. But in reality, that model isn't working. We don't need like a jack of all trades and a master of none doesn't always help. And so you have plenty of situations that police shouldn't be involved in, or someone else should be the primary responder to it with minimal or no police backup. And we have to start to get out in front and figure out ways to make that sort of thing happen. Just to reduce and minimize the chances for these bad outcomes to continue to happen.
And we saw a very opposite scenario in Flint, Michigan, where I believe their chief of police literally, you know, got out in front of a group and spoke and said, "I'm going to march with you. We're in this together." Takes off, his helmet, and he put down his baton. I don't know that he wasn't wearing a gun. I believe he was. He was definitely wearing some, you know, a jacket or, but, you know, his clothing suggests he was still wearing protective gear, but he literally said, "Let's all do this together." And there was hugging and whatever. And that looks great, but I know where this is going to go. And I'm just going to,
it's a great gesture, but the time for gestures is over, and gestures don't get us anywhere. They don't accomplish anything. It's great for the moment. It's a photo op, and I guess we're turning it into a story. But the reality is, for right now, that officer needs to talk to his officers about how they respond to various calls and how they deal with people and how they're approaching stops, right? I mean, like, there's so much that we need to really look at. I mean, people, you know, police officers tell you all the time about the number of interactions that they have, and so many of these are violent, and so because of that, they have to be on the defensive all the time. Well, okay, so maybe we should have fewer interactions, right? So maybe we should figure out a way to kind of put some space between you and what's going on. Now, the police will initially say, well, that's going to cause, criminals are going to be able to get away with crime. Well, we have to look at some of the other things that are causing the crime and maybe not just be so reactive to the crimes and help try to stop them before they happen. And I don't mean a minority report sort of situation, but actually take away people's reasons for committing crime by education and resources and things along those and things of those.
Opportunity.
Opportunity, exactly. And again, it takes time and it doesn't happen overnight. And it's not just one stroke of the pen that's going to do it. But, you know, when you look at all these ticky-tack reasons why police can pull you over and interact with you, a broken tail light, a light in your license plate is out, a broken headlight or tinted windows and all these sort of things, the bullshit that they pull you over for, there's really no reason for it, right? Broken tail lights, a light not in your license plate holder, not having a license plate on the front of your car, which is something I got pulled out of my car, put in handcuffs and put in the back of a police car over. you know, all that because I didn't have a front license plate. And then I was told that they did that because it was for my safety.
Right.
All of that, like, you don't need any of that. That, none of that is upholding the rule of law. None of that is impacting the fabric of society, right? You're using that strictly as a way to gain access to people to figure out what they're doing, whether you have, you know, reason to believe that they're criminal or you're just going fishing, just taking a shot in the dark, you know, or it's a revenue generator, right?
And right. Oh, we saw that a lot.
Right. I mean, here's these, you know, tickets that, you know, again, does it impact the rule of law? No, it doesn't. But, you know, it's a $50 ticket. And then if you pay it late, it you know, bumps up the line to a certain amount of money. And then if you don't pay it, then there's warrants out for your arrest. And now you got to pay the ticket. You got to pay all these other things to get out of jail. And it just traps people. And those sort of things are what make people angry, right? Like, they were doing everything right. Nothing was going on. And then a cop pulls them over for a busted taillight. Right, which turns into a ticket that they can't afford to pay, right? And the cop, the cop walks away smiling with his bullshit ticket, and you know, just like, oh, just bought myself another AR-15 with that one, you know.
Well, I want people to know first of all that your missing front license plate was stolen, so it's not like you were breaking the law intentionally. It was stolen, right. And when you asked for help in filing the report, you were basically told you're no longer interesting to me, and we're told to fuck off. Right. Not to be a dick, but that's a key piece of that story. And so I'm glad you said it the way you did, because I don't want to shit on the gesture by the chief of police in Flint. Good. You did something good. Now, I had a few friends on Facebook that said some things that I thought were interesting. One of them said that's the equivalent of an abusive boyfriend, you know, buying his girlfriend flowers, you know, her lips still bleeding from when he hit her earlier in the day. But here's some roses, baby. I love you. Well, fuck off. And another person called it copaganda, where it was like, you know, we're going to try to show happy things to make you all forget about this. And, well, you need to do better. But a positive gesture shouldn't be shit on. Just, I mean, the actions going forward have to reflect a change in attitude.
And I think people need to be, and, you know, the next thing I'm about to say is going to be crazy because it's just, we can never get balance, but you're going to have to balance the two. You can't be so cynical that, you know, every gesture out there and every word out of someone's mouth who you feel is an offender or you define as problematic, you're going to question now every apology. You're going to question everything they do, you know, trying to move the ball forward. I mean, because then what happens is, are you actually looking to fix things, or are you just going to constantly attack people because now you're really just looking for retribution, for, you know, to get out all your frustrations? And so what you're really asking for is just the power to do to other people what was done to you, or what you feel was done to you, or what could be done to you, you know, without repercussion. And I think that, you know, for some people, you see the way that they, you know, especially a lot of the Black thought leaders, you know, no gesture is good enough. And listen, to a degree, I agree and understand, because it can't just be gestures. It needs to be followed up with action. But I think at some point you have to allow for that action to take place, which means that, you know, you got to put a pin in the board. Here's the bad action. Here's the apology. Now let's see what action comes after the apology. And you keep track of it. And if you know, the person pops up again in a year and nothing has changed, then you say, listen, we've heard this song and dance from you before. You said you were going to, I mean, you gave us this great apology and nothing happened, and now here we are again. Or maybe they do go out and they, you know, this particular sheriff or police chief works with his department, and the number of arrests that they have go down, and the number of complaints that they have go down. And you see a more diverse workforce and all these other things. You know, you have to give people an opportunity. All right, you're protesting now. They can't change a law immediately with you just standing there screaming at them. They can't undo whatever has happened in the past. And, you know, we can't bring people back to life. So people need space to actually make the changes that you're demanding. And you need to make clear demands.
And I think there needs to be a pattern. I mean, I know it's easy for, you know, 49-year-old white guy to say, just trust that it's going to get better. No, I can't say that. You have no reason to trust anything. And, you know, the idea that, you know, this is a gesture now to calm things down until things can get back to normal. Back to normal is the fucking problem. So,
yeah.
So, you know, good. I'm glad to see this guy do this thing. You know, the police chief in Flint, glad to see him do it. And if it is followed up with actions and changes in philosophies and, like you said, not trying to, you know, nickel and dime people to keep funding the militarization of the police, which I know I harp about all the time and will still do, then great. Show, but you need to show, I don't know, you tell me, because I don't want to overstep here. Like, how, if a police department that's had a shaky record and most of them in, you know, major cities have got some ugly stuff. Minneapolis, when we talked about George Floyd, we had to go, well, we had Philando Castile. We had Diamond was her last name getting shot and killed.
Justine Diamond.
And then someone rattled off like three other names. And it's like, fuck. You know, we can't talk about these stories without getting out of Minneapolis, and neither of us have any connections to Minneapolis. So there needs to be a sustained pattern of we're trying to make this better. And I do genuinely feel for the police. I've actually talked to my cousin who's a cop down in Atlanta, and we've been messaging back and forth. He's in a county just north of Atlanta, and they were told, be prepared to get, you know, mobilized and get downtown if need be. And I'm messaging back and forth, and now it's not a generic cop. It's my cousin. And he's a great guy, you know, and I've talked to him many times about, you know, his thoughts on being a policeman. In fact, I've thought about trying to get him on the show with us. And, you know, this all makes their jobs tougher. And someone, you know, civilians like you and I will say, if these assholes, and I'm not going to put it just on the four guys in Minnesota, because it's happened so many times in so many places. They make the jobs tougher, so much tougher for policemen. Bad cops make this tougher for good cops. And whatever percentage you want to throw out there, we would all be making up. But to do the job well, to protect and serve, and I know that's a slogan, not a reality, to do that job well, boy, wouldn't it be nice if everyone didn't distrust you and think you might kill them, and therefore they're going to be on edge with you. It's a vicious cycle. And for it to get better, it has to change. It has to stop. And wholesale change is the only way that's going to happen. The tweaking the status quo doesn't help.
And I think, right. And I think we have to, you know, the one thing I want to go back to is that it's not just changing the police. Like, yeah, we do need to change the business administration of policing. We do need to change the reporting structure of the police and how they handle, you know, their non-criminal investigations and things like that. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we have to change outside of policing for it to work, right? Like, there's a synergy to all this that needs to be addressed in healthcare, mental health care, education, job creation. All those sort of things need to work together in these lower income neighborhoods and in these rural areas as well. I think the one thing that's really being left out of this, or a couple things, are, you know, I mean, you've got bad police in Appalachia. You've got bad police out, you know, in the hills of Utah and places like that. I mean, we don't talk about it. The media is not going to show it. No one's going to react to a white person being beaten and killed like we react to black people being beaten and killed. You know, the history of this country tells us that, you know, bad things are happening when black people are being beaten and killed by police officers and white people. But listen, it happens to white people as well, and it needs to be a bigger issue. And so if it's happening to everybody, then we need to look at, again, these wholesale changes that have to that can benefit everyone. Right. And so whether you're in the east side of Cleveland or you're out in the hills of West Virginia or Kentucky, you can benefit from better healthcare, better education, better job training, and better opportunity. And those are the sort of things that reduce crime. Right.
Right.
And so then that reduces the demand on police, that diminishes the resources that police need to put out in order to help the communities that they ultimately should be serving. And those are the sort of things that really need more focus and attention. We talk about them all the time, and yes, they get a lot of money, but the sort of brain power that we need to fix them isn't truly going into them. You know, our Secretary of Education is Betsy DeVos.
Right.
And she's not qualified to be in that position, right? I mean, there's no reason for her to be there. You need someone who's truly trying to help figure out the issues with education, right? And we've had people try. You know, in Common Core and all this other stuff, teachers complain about and say it's not the right thing. And, you know, now the grade schools and high schools are just for state testing, and we've lost it. But we've tried, and we need to keep trying, and we need to figure it out, and we need to figure out how to fill these gaps that exist. And it's gonna take a lot of effort and energy, and we have to focus on things outside of what we've been focusing on for the last 50 years. You know, it's going to take more than just race analysis and race fighting and baiting and everything else to fix it.
You're right. That's a huge, bigger conversation, but the whole Make America Great Again, getting our shit together and being intellectually honest as a culture would be a great start. I mean, if there's one thing that the COVID-19 situation has done, it has shown how easy it is to spread disinformation and get people to buy into it and start re-spewing it as quickly as possible. And no one benefits from that, and yet it's fucking everywhere.
Jim, because it's so easy to do. You can literally take any picture. Right. You can take any picture and put words on it, and people will attribute all sorts of truths to that picture. Right. Like, I could take a picture of any famous person, LeBron James. Right. And come up with a quote. I could pull a quote out of any book. And if I put the quote over from the book over LeBron James and circulate it. Right. I put it out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. All right, within probably less than a week, someone will say, you know, LeBron James once said that it was the best of times and it was the worst of times, Jim. And I truly believe that the king got that one right. And because it's just that fucking.
And it was a king that was about. So
right, I mean, but you see it anywhere, right? You take words, you put it on a picture,
right.
You circle it on the internet, and people will literally say, "Well, that's got to be true. It's on a picture on the internet, and it's really dramatic. So it's got to be the most accurate thing I've ever read."
Right? You know,
I mean, that's why it happens. Like, whether it's COVID or a quote or. You know, Quentin Tarantino eats squirrels. That's how we got COVID. Like, I mean, you can, like, and that's not true. I haven't seen it anywhere, but like, I guarantee you, I can make people believe that Quentin Tarantino eating squirrels somehow created COVID-19.
Well, he went and shot a movie in China afterwards. They were filming Kill Bill 3, and he went to Wuhan, China after that. And after that, it all happened, so it must be the case. You know, I mean, the flip side of that, it's kind of funny. The amount of distrust is out there. When we had Cody Brown on our show a couple weeks ago, he accurately quoted Martin Luther King Jr., and he was afraid to say that that was accurate. He's like, I just saw this on the internet. So kudos to him for not owning it just because he saw it on the internet. But even when truthful stuff gets out there, people should be questioning it. They often are not.
Right. I mean, and the other thing, too, I mean, and don't discount people who actually put a lot of effort into a lie, you know, making something look like it's a scholarly journalistic
right.
article. And I mean, they put a lot of time, effort and energy. Oh, maybe not. I mean, because actually you can do this stuff pretty quick now.
Actually, it's really easy.
Right. I mean, it's really easy to make something look very professional and real. And so, I mean, that's the other end of the spectrum, right? I mean, just write something that's really long and you put it in Adobe and a PDF and you add some border and banner and some, you know, different type and font and things like that. And all of a sudden it's like, look, here's a report. Like, who did this report?
I mean, I know I told you this, but I want to tell the audience. I was in a bar the other day, and there was some dude that I was drinking next to. We were safely socially distanced, but he was screaming away about how dumb everything is all fake, and he was spewing out numbers, and he was saying, you know, 800,000 kids have not gotten treatment because of this fake COVID, and he was just spewing shit out. And I couldn't take it, but I knew that engaging was just not going to help anything. So I simply said to this guy who was at an Irish pub in Cam's Corner neighborhood of Cleveland, and I just asked him politely, that's interesting, I didn't know that. Can you tell me what your source is? And he told me his source was Harvard.
Come again?
He said, oh, I didn't tell you this?
No.
I'm in this bar, this idiot's running his mouth.
I mean, I get the story now.
And I said, can you please tell me your source? His response was Harvard. And I'm like, okay, you like just said school? A smart person place.
Okay.
I'll remove the snarkiness and say that I'm fairly confident this guy is not regularly speaking with the president of the medical school of Harvard University. He literally just said, when asked where are you getting this, he just said, I'm going to say a place that has smart people, because who could challenge that? At which point, I changed this conversation.
And maybe there was something that came out of Harvard that someone acknowledged on the news or
sure.
something about, and I don't know.
No, but you do. That's,
yeah. I mean,
by the way, I didn't mention that was a white guy, but it was.
And for some reason,
payback.
For some reason, when you started telling me the story, I knew what you were talking about, but I also know where you were. So.
You do know where I was, so that did make it 98% likely that it would be a white guy. It was, and here's the thing. You know exactly what that guy was. You might, if I put him in a lineup, you would find him.
Right. And the reality is, chances are I probably actually know him with the amount of time I've spent
True.
In those same bars
True.
With you and without you.
True. All right.
You know, so, all right, so what's the next topic?
Well, we'll get to talk about Drew Brees. So Drew Brees kind of stepped in it. I want to be very fair to him because he was on, like, Yahoo Finance or Yahoo Business or something like that, and he gets asked a question about protests, and he immediately goes down the road of, I would never support a protest that disrespected the flag. He got crushed immediately by including his own teammates, and justifiably so. What he then and what he basically said was,
hold on. That's what he said. He said he would never support a protest that disrespects the flag. And then his teammates, like Michael Jenkins, came out and said, basically, Drew Brees, you need to shut the fuck up. And other, Michael
Thomas, LeBron came at him.
LeBron and you just said justifiably so. Explain why you believe that he should have been attacked the way that he was.
Because what he said was horribly timed and kind of disingenuous, because I'm pretty sure he knelt, with teammates back in 2017. And it was all kind of to bring the whole Colin Kaepernick protest back into the forefront, which is a great time to do it because Colin Kaepernick tried to peacefully protest thing.
We got that, yeah.
So,
well, I just think it's worth kind of talking about a little bit more, you know, what he said and why he said it and why, yes, the timing was bad. And I think the issue that needs to really be explained is why it was bad, because there are some people who are going to say, look, he's just defending the flag. Why can't he defend the flag? And really, the answer comes down to a couple of things. One, this country isn't about kneeling to flags and objects, right? We fought the Revolutionary War because we weren't going to kneel to a fucking crown, right? I mean, it's like no taxation without representation. That was the reason. That was the thing. We did that. you know, we also, I mean, we have a constitution, we have freedom of speech, we have this right to protest, all these sort of things. So, like, if you love the flag, that's fine. But, you know, condemning people who don't, who are protesting it for good reason, that should, that's something that we should embrace as American, right? We should embrace the protest, right? It was a peaceful protest, a protest against something that was that you can identify, right? Bad policing, disparities in, you know, Mike Wood would argue about the numbers, you know, saying that they, you know, it happens to everybody and that it's not racist, but we know racists do race. Yeah, I mean, and
you know, I don't like talking about him without him defending himself.
He's not here to defend himself, so I don't want to go down that road. But what I'm saying is, though, Colin Kaepernick's protest was valid.
Yes.
Right? It was valid, and it was everything that you want in a protest, because in all actuality, it made a statement, but it... Hi. And sorry, my daughter's not in here.
Invasion by Eden. Let me run with this
hold
then.
Hold on one second. Let me... Hold on.
All right.
Hey, I'm doing something real quick. Can you... I'll come down, and I'll check all that stuff out when I'm done, okay? All right, just close the door behind you.
I was going to cut that out, but that's kind of cute.
No, it's fine. And she turned the light off. I'm going to have to turn back on because the ceiling fan is going to go off, and I'm going to start to sweat and start sweating bullets. But anyway, so my point is like there are people who are going to jump to Drew Brees' defense, and I think that you need to be able to clearly explain why. Again, why the timing was so bad. Like, people kind of get it, but I don't know if they fully get it. And also, like, I think it just needs to be reiterated that, look, Colin Kaepernick takes a knee, right? It doesn't impact you. It doesn't slow you down. It didn't slow the game down. It didn't stop the game. Nothing happened. He did it during the national anthem that was going to happen during the game anyway. And then he got up, and that was it. Right, and then everybody lost their mind and said this is the worst possible thing that he could do because it disrespects the flag. And then they said it disrespected veterans and police and, you know, babies with cancer. Like, it was just the most offensive thing that anyone could ever do. Right, when all the guy is saying is like, look, we need to bring attention to the fact that our police are doing some bad things and they're doing them with impunity, and that needs to be addressed. And so fast forward. Colin Kaepernick gets blackballed from the league. They, you know, throw that bullshit tryout out there for him.
Right.
They basically said that he was retired. You know, they distributed all the different media talking heads, Stephen A. Smith kind of being the leader, to discredit Colin Kaepernick and all the things, and put out these lies that he wanted ridiculous amounts of money, that he had to be a starter, that... you know, his girlfriend was problematic and that he didn't really want to play football, all these sort of things, right? They attack this guy, you know, all over this protest, and then this happens. People absolutely lose their mind, and it's just like, well, this is unacceptable, right? Like, they're protesting and people peacefully protesting. All right, that was kind of okay, but people were still getting pissed about it because, you know, what's the big deal, blah, blah, blah. And then the rioting and the looting starts, right? So that's completely unacceptable. And then it's just like, all right, so Colin Kaepernick's thing isn't acceptable, and yet this thing isn't acceptable. So what sort of protest is acceptable to you MAGA folks? You tell us. Right, because it seems like it's a moving goalpost.
Another friend of mine from the comedy scene put a video out there that said basically, this is the equivalent of someone's bullying you and you tell them please stop bullying me and they don't, and you say dude stop bullying me and they don't, and then finally you punch them in the face and they go what was that for? You didn't need to resort to violence. Well, tried multiple times to politely bring this up and there was nothing to be heard. So, finally, I reacted by punching you in the face, and now you want to listen. Now, I want to bring up that Nate Boyer, who was the one who told Colin Kaepernick, hey, you know, I know what you're doing now, I understand you, would you consider kneeling and showing respect for the fallen, but still honoring, you know, or respecting the anthem? And that's why he kneels, and we've talked about it, but so many people still don't fucking know this. That, you know, Nate Boyer, who was a combat Green Beret, who then played
for... It's not that they don't know. They don't care.
Like, you know, Steve, I disagree. I think a lot of people don't even know.
Okay, that's I still don't think that people care, because I know for a fact we've put it out on Twitter. I know that, I think, didn't you write a story something about it and put it on our website?
A while ago, yeah.
And not to mention, it's been covered by much larger sports outlets than ours. People are choosing, either they're choosing not to read it, or they know it and they don't care. It's what they believe that Colin Kaepernick represents, being a rich black athlete, having the audacity to do something that they don't like, and they don't care what his reasoning is behind it. They don't care whether it's justified or not. They just don't like that they told him to not do something, and he continued to do it. And then he got support from more of those other rich black athletes, even when the league did what they wanted him, what they wanted him to do, and basically banished him from the league by not
saying. Right. And interestingly, so then Trump sided with Drew Brees, and Drew Brees said, well, first of all, let's give Drew Brees some credit. Very quickly, he apologized. He said he mishandled the situation, and his teammates came to his side. And I think Drew Brees does have a history of, A, being a leader. I mean, his pregame speech, his pregame fire-ups are legendary. And I think he's well-known as a good guy. Even and Nate Boyer said he's basically a good guy. He fucked up with how he handled it. And he did, you know.
I mean, look, and Drew Brees is a guy who's passionate about the U.S. military. He's trained right. with U.S. military forces. He's a big believer in doing the USO and entertaining the troops while they're overseas. He's very thankful because he's a firm believer that the U.S. military provides him the freedom to do what he does every Sunday in the fall. And he's thankful for them for that. And he's a firm believer that most police are good, and he's willing to give them credit for it and celebrate them and praise it. And he's got the freedom to dismiss, you know, the bad actions and, you know, the bad of what the police do and just focus on the good. And in his mind, I guarantee you, his viewpoint is, well, I can't do anything about the bad police, so I'm just going to support the good ones, and I'm going to support the military because, you know, that's the American way. And he's not necessarily thinking about it because he's not saying that I'm supporting the military, I'm supporting the flag, and I'm supporting the police because I hate black people and I want them systematically oppressed. He's not saying that.
Right.
You know, I mean, but at the same time, he's still wrong with the way that he handled it, but him coming back now with the apology and roping Trump into it and saying, no, Donald, we need to understand and we need to focus that this has never been about the flag and it's been about these bad things that are happening, I think that's good. The question is, again, what actions follow?
Do you accept Breeze's apology?
I mean, I don't, you know.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it looks good. It plays well. I think it's a good start if he is about action. And when Colin Kaepernick started his protest, I said the same thing. Like, this is interesting. I don't necessarily care. I don't know if it's worth it if he's not doing anything about it, right? If he's kneeling and then just sitting there, then I, you know what? Like, he's causing himself and he's causing me stress, right?
Right.
Because, if you're not going to put forth the effort to make the change, right, you're not going to have a foundation. You're not going to create opportunities for kids. You're not going to build alliances with different police forces in local communities. Then all you're doing is bringing attention to yourself and disrupting something that I enjoy. But if you are doing those things, and I back you 100%, and Colin Kaepernick, for what it's worth, he's done that and
right.
he's been doing it, so I support it. Right, so with Drew Brees, and Drew Brees, what he's done in New Orleans to help that city rebound from Katrina has been well documented. And the question is, how can he basically make that more robust? You know, how can he fold this situation, take it as a learning opportunity, take advantage of the spotlight? And even if he does it just for PR, if he builds, again, alliances, coalitions, creates opportunity, and allows for other people who have the know-how and the knowledge and experience to make the situation better, then I'm all for Drew Brees at that point. I just need to see him do something. The apology is a good start, but what is it?
Right. That's fair. Fortunately, that was the only quarterback in the NFL that did anything dumb this week. So we can just keep on moving. Tick, tick.
Well, it's not. Well, Jake, to be fair, Jake Fromm didn't do what he did this week.
True. He did it in March of 2019. But this is brutal for me because I really wanted to like this kid. And so if Jake Fromm, fifth round draft pick from the University of Georgia by the Buffalo Bills, I was really excited that he could be an interesting member of the team, and he still could be. But he he direct messaged someone in March of 2019, where he used the term, basically, hopefully they only escalate the price of suppressors, meaning sound suppressors from firearms, so that only elite whites can get them. Ha ha. And you and I texted back and forth about this, and I jokingly said to you, like, I'm working to come up with a context that makes this okay. And you texted something else back immediately that was unrelated, but I immediately thought that text was going to say, good luck with that, because I got nothing. And let me ask a question real quick.
Yeah.
Is to me, what Jake Fromm did is much more disturbing and upsetting because he did not expect to be heard. What Drew Brees said was on Yahoo Finance.
Yes.
What Jake Fromm said was a direct message to some woman that he was talking to back and forth when he was in college. You know, I always say integrity is what you do when you think no one's watching. This was done in what he believed would be, something that was never heard outside of that particular direct message on whatever social media venue. And I want to give the Buffalo Bills organization credit. He got called out, and he apparently apologized to his teammates, and his offensive coordinator and head coach said it's up to him to re-earn the trust of his teammates. And, you know, I'd like to think that he's not a bad dude, but this really makes me not like him.
Yeah.
Where do you stand? You
know what? It's your right to not like him. Listen, it's got to suck for him, you know, having a private conversation and having it leak. But that's where, you know, you got to recognize it's 2020. You know, there are the people who are going to be all upset, like, oh, well, you know, that girl, if she leaked that, she's the asshole. You're not wrong, but he did say it. And so if you're saying shit like that, then that's the root of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because if he doesn't say that, then there's probably not a reason to leak the conversation and it doesn't get leaked. But you say dumb, you know, hurtful, racist shit and you put it out there for, you know, you put it out in a way where it can be archived and we can and someone can recall it. Then you say shit like that at your own risk if you're going to put it out there. I was neutral on the kid before. Clearly, I'm not a fan of him now. I hope for your sake you don't need to rely on him.
I'll be curious to see what happens in the locker room. Like, what is his explanation? I literally was trying to come up with a way to make that sound like, if in this context, it would be okay, and I'm not going to insult you or anyone's intelligence by forcing it into something that I have no idea if was even possibly true. But it's a bad look.
I think that's the one thing we got to get away from is constantly trying to justify bad behavior before. Like, we have to be able just to say, like, look, this is something stupid, what he said. It's clearly racist, and if he's not racist, this was a racist statement. Even if maybe he doesn't feel that he himself is a racist, you know, there's a lot of different forms and levels to it. It's not all hood wearing, swastika tattooed, you know, screaming bigots. That's not
right.
The definition of racism. There's a lot of levels to this. And so, I mean, you know, he's just, you know, to me, he's just another white college kid. You know, my expectation level of, you know, young 20-something white kids is not very high. I was young and 20-something. I didn't always do the bright thing, the right thing, or the brightest things, plenty of dumb shit. Glad social media wasn't around the way it is now when I was that age. But for some of these guys, You know, I grew up, like, when I was 20, I was around plenty of 20-year-old white guys, and they all said, did, you know, some pretty dumb, stupid things, and also made racist, misogynistic, you know, it may not necessarily have been about black people, but they would make comments about Asian people, Hispanic people, women, gays, all that other stuff, and I'm sure they put it in text. It's not a surprise. It is a cultural thing, and a lot of them don't do it meaning any harm. It's just, oh, well, this is how everybody talks. It's not, you know, we don't really feel that, you know, niggers are stupid or whatever. We're just saying it. Like, well, hold on, pause.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily, like, again, I'm just neutral on them. And I wasn't a fan before. I'm less now. Whatever. This is kind of par for the course, and it, like, this is on y'all to figure out.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting you know for him, I mean, in the, like, locker room.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is on y'all to figure out. You know, racism, the only way I could put it now is the way I view it is, if you have an issue with me because of the color of my skin, that's a fucking you problem, right? And it doesn't become a me problem until you fuck with my money and you fuck with my freedom or my life. Right. And Jake Fromm isn't impacting my money. He is not impacting my freedom or my life. So I don't give a fuck about Jake Fromm. Right now, whose money he may be impacting are receivers who may need him to throw the ball to them. Right. So now they may directly have an issue with him and they may take it up with him. And he is going to have to figure out a way to deal with that without drowning in a fucking toilet.
Or offensive linemen who need to protect his ass, who might go, right, you know, in preseason, Jerry Hughes might get loose. And yeah, you're wearing a red jersey, but you might get jacked in the back of the head a couple times. And fucking deal with it, kid, because you're said some really dumb shit.
Right, or you got defensive players who need to make a roster or who need to get a bonus and want to make sure the coaches know that they're getting after it and they see him and their eyes light up.
You know, right, oh, in preseason shit? Oh, boy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, guys need to make a roster. He's out there in the fourth quarter of the second preseason game and, you know, some no-name guy out of Northwest Idaho State is trying to get on a roster and he's like, ooh. You're the one who got my baby sister pregnant.
Are you doing a line from, was it The Program?
Yes, it's the Program, the quintessential football movie that you had to have seen.
It's awful.
If you were born after 1975. It's terrible.
It's awful.
The movie's terrible. The only three redeeming qualities are James Caan, Halle Berry, and Omar Epps.
Omar Epps. James Caan as the not-so- hidden head of Florida State. Two more things we got to talk about really quick. One is our mayor of the city of Cleveland, Frank Jackson, used a line the other day. And I'm actually going to borderline defend him. He said, the perception of Cleveland, he didn't say actuality. The perception of Cleveland is that we are the butthole of the world.
Okay, Frank, so the problem is, it's not only that he said it, but, you know, Frank Jackson, for some reason, has a little bit of a southern twang. And so he goes out there and he says, you know, that Cleveland has the perception of being the butthole with emphasis on the butt and the hole. Right? Like, he says it just in this...
Emphasis on the wrong syllable. Yes, I get you.
Right. He just says it with so much emphasis. And, it just stuck out like a sore thumb. And remember, right when he said it, one of my good friends who pays close attention to what's going on in Cleveland, he texted to me like right away,
right,
almost live.
I was sitting next to you and you were having a cigar.
Right. And he said, I think what he was searching for was armpit, but instead we got butthole. And after that, shortly, it was all over the news. It's a bad look. It blows my mind. And again, this is who the police chief of Cleveland serves at the pleasure as. So
right,
take that for what it's worth.
And he's been mayor for a while. It's not like he came in here and is trying to fix things. It's like, dude,
I think this is his third go round as mayor, if I'm not mistaken.
It's second or third, and yeah, like at some point you own this and you have not done well. Now I got to call out one more thing real quick because I put something on Facebook and I showed it to you with almost glee with how crazy some of the shit you find at 3 in the morning on on you know, infomercials, and I showed you the Republicans versus Democrats
chessboard. Yes,
which I stand by being fucking goofy and stupid, and you then literally trumped me with Trumpy Bear.
The Trumpy Bear, Jim. It's our nation's. And if you go online, I will tweet out.
Should we?
Yeah. No, I'm gonna tweet out the link to the original Trumpy Bear ad. It's ridiculous. And most people won't buy it because the thing is, you can get it for two payments of $19.95, Jim.
Well, first of all, if you need to separate your payments into two of $19.95, that says something.
Hey, listen, not eight. Everybody's got a different
budget. If I'm an elitist, you know, because I said $40 is too big, then I'm an elitist.
Budget shame. Listen, there was a time in my young college days and law school days where $40 was a fortune.
So. Understood. I've been there too.
But
did you ever want to buy a teddy bear in those days?
But no. I mean, maybe I did for some girl I was trying to bang. I don't know. But I didn't spend $40 on it for damn sure. But no, the Trumpy Bear is very real. And I watch, like, when I can't sleep at night, which is often, although it's gotten better since I've cut back on drinking. I usually watch like South Park because now they basically play South Park on a loop
right. Almost
every night during the week. And so if I can't sleep, I do get up out of bed so I'm not lying there awake. I'll go to another room, watch South Park for a little bit, get tired, and then I'll go back to bed, and that seems to work. But watching Comedy Central and South Park late at night, I see both the chessboard, the political figure chessboard, which is creepy, and then the Trumpy Bear thing, which I didn't think was real until I looked it up, and it's definitely a real thing. The money goes to Trump's campaign, you know, and they're scamming the shit out of people. Yes, Trumpy Bear. It's even got his trademark hair that you can brush.
When you showed me that, I think I challenged you on three separate occasions. Like, this is a joke. This is a parody. Yes. There's no fucking way this is a real thing. And you're like, real? And no, by the way,
no. Because, well, you thought I was bullshitting from the beginning, and then when I pulled up the video, the look on your face was of disbelief and anger, because I think there was just the fact that you thought you caught me in a bad joke, and it wasn't a bad joke. This is real life, bitch.
You know, I can't even defend myself on that. I mean, it was when fine. I'm gonna own that and acknowledge it. Now you have to, you have to be honest back at me. If you were going to make up something and make it as hammy and ridiculous as possible, could you have gone over the top of that?
No.
I'm a biker and I have Trumpy Bear in front of my windshield. I'm a trucker and I have Trumpy Bear. I love having Trumpy Bear with me in my office. I'm a black guy and I love Trumpy Bear, who's making America great again for black people. Look at me.
The only thing it was missing was some woman with a vibrator taped to Trumpy Bear's hand. Trumpy Bear brings me so much pleasure. You can get this pleasure too.
I wish I could argue with that.
Of 1995, I swear to God.
I wish.
The only thing missing.
I wish, other than having a Hitachi magic wand as an accessory to Trumpy Bear, you're right. Yes. They could not have made it worse. Fuck. Right.
I mean, it's amazing. And the President of the United States okayed this. Right, like nothing happens without his signature. It goes to his campaign, and the President of the United States signed off on this. So there you go,
America. Fuck yeah, dude. Winning. We got to shut it down. Winning. I'm sick of winning. All right, brother. Good talk. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. I'm Jim_WhiskeyKong on Twitter. You'll get responses from Steve if you go to at Whiskey Congress on Twitter. You can email me, jim@whiskeycongress.com, steve@whiskeycongress.com if you want to email Steve. Thanks for listening, and wow. Later, man.
Everybody gets a free Trumpy Bear.
No, they're not free. Oh, they're not free. We're done. All right.